Hi, I'm Lorraine Rapp.
And I'm Linda Lowen.
Welcome to Take Care, a weekly conversation on health and wellness produced by WRVO Public Media.
The most common cancer in women is breast cancer. 1 in 8 women in the United States will develop invasive breast cancer over the course of a lifetime. We know there's a hereditary component and that the earlier the diagnosis, the better. But what if you could greatly reduce your chances of being diagnosed with the disease just by making a few simple changes in your life? Wouldn't you do it?
Joining us to discuss breast cancer prevention is medical oncologist Dr. Ann Partridge, founder and director of the Program for Young Women with Breast Cancer and director of the Adult Survivorship Program at the Dana-Farber Cancer Institute. Dr. Partridge is associate professor of medicine at Harvard Medical School. Welcome back to Take Care, Dr. Partridge. We're so happy that you're joining us.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
Before we talk about ways to prevent breast cancer, let's talk briefly about who is at most risk for getting breast cancer in the general population, not genetics, not family history.
Sure. Well, there are a number of factors that have been shown over and over again to be associated with increased risk of breast cancer. And before I launch into the factors beyond genetics, I first want to state that we, our scientists and researchers, are really good at looking at big populations and saying what proportion of women will get breast cancer and what are those risk factors. But we, as doctors and healthcare recommenders, are terrible at predicting which individual woman will get breast cancer. And that's a real conundrum. But what we try to do is make the general modifications and recommendations for individuals that people can do and should do, both for breast cancer reduction in risk as well as for potential reduction in other risks. So that's what I'm going to focus on, modifiable risk factors, recognizing that unfortunately some women will make these changes and they'll still get breast cancer, and some people don't make any changes and don't get breast cancer. But it's in general, you're more likely to versus less likely to if one can make certain changes. So what are the modifiable risk factors for breast cancer? Well, there are environmental risk factors like exposure to certain kinds of toxins, which people in general don't have their own ability to change, but we can change as a society, like get carcinogens out of, you know, certain places and avoid, you know, estrogen if it's not going to help you, like hormone replacement therapy, which we were doing for everybody, but now we only do if people really, really need it because it could increase risk of breast cancer. And then there are these individual choices and individual risks that we can modify as individuals, often with help. And those things are the following. One, women who are overweight, especially after age 18 and beyond, but especially after menopause, have a higher risk of developing breast cancer. Common sense would dictate that it would be good for those women to lose weight and try and get to what we call an ideal body mass index for their height and their weight. A second big risk factor is exercise. And of course, that's related. Women who exercise on a regular basis, and they don't have to be marathoners or CrossFitters, they can be walkers, getting a little bit of short breath as they get going. If you can exercise 150 minutes or more per week, that's only 5 times a week for a half hour, those women have had lower risk of developing breast cancer.
But
so we recommend doing that.
I want to follow up on each of these things that you're saying and understand as much as that is known right now, why these things are being recommended. For instance, what is it about being overweight that increases a woman's risk? What's going on with being overweight and the connection?
That's a great question, and we're not really sure. A lot of scientists are looking into it, but what we think it has to do with is what's been termed energy balance. So it's kind of the input and the output, and that's, you know, the diet and the exercise. And what you want to do is achieve good balance where someone's not net gaining weight or overweight. And we think it probably has to do with both hormones, and women who are overweight often have higher levels of estrogen. And it probably also has to do with the hormone insulin. And women who are overweight tend to have higher levels of insulin, and people who don't exercise also tend to have higher levels. So we're really trying to work out the actual mechanisms, but we think it has to do with the hormonal milieu or the hormonal environment, so to speak, for people who don't exercise and or gain weight and have excess body mass.
Now, in terms of exercise, we are talking, I mean, you mentioned 150 minutes, which could be 30 minutes of walking five times a week. But that basically has to be steady state, because if you stop the exercising, the benefits drop off. You have to incorporate this as a regular lifestyle change, correct?
Correct. That's good for your cardiovascular health. It's good for prevention of other solid tumors and cancer. It's good for prevention of diabetes. And so I think exercise is kind of a no-brainer. And it's really tough in our society. We live in what one of my colleagues has called an obesogenic society. So everything's convenience. Everybody loves their cars, especially where you guys are. And basically, we have to learn how to walk more and how to, you know, build into our lifestyles, taking the stairs, walking a little further in the parking lot, walking around the mall in bad weather or some other place at the gym, getting outside and bundling up and exercising if that's what you choose to do. But and our lifestyles have made it very difficult, I think, for many people to get the recommended exercise. And that may be part of why we see increasing rates of breast cancer.
I think it's important to narrow it down, as you just did for us, because I think as a society, everyone knows what we should be doing, eating better, getting more sleep, and exercising more. But I'm afraid that we're not really tuning into that. So let's move on to the other things you've talked about, weight and exercise. What are some of the other things that are modifiable that we can incorporate?
Well, some of the other things are actually other no-brainers. So smoking has now been associated at a low level with breast cancer risk. We know it causes lung cancer. We know it causes heart disease and other cancers. But it's now been associated both active and passive with the development of breast cancer. So another good reason to not smoke or quit if one is smoking. And obviously, people need help with that, too, because it's an addiction. Another big risk factor for breast cancer, and it's pretty much the more one drinks, the higher the risk, is alcohol. And alcohol is one of those tricky ones, which is such a part of our society. And a glass of wine a day has been associated with prevention of heart disease. We all talked about, you know, heart disease is something that if you don't, you know, that the most Americans will die of eventually, hopefully very old. So we do want to prevent heart disease, and at the same time, the more one drinks, the higher the risk of breast cancer. And so what most experts there recommend is no more than one glass of wine on average or the equivalent per day. And that can kind of get people into that sweet spot of good for your heart, but not so bad for breast cancer risks.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Take Care, a conversation on health and wellness on WRVO Public Media. I'm Lorraine Rapp.
And I'm Linda Lowen.
We're talking to Dr. Ann Partridge. She's associate professor at Harvard Medical School, the founder and director of the Program for Young Women with Breast Cancer, and also the director of the Adult Survivorship Program at the Dana-Farber Cancer Center in Boston. In other words, we have the expert here, folks, and she's giving us some good advice. Let's just go back to alcohol. The amount of alcohol, but have they been able to narrow it down? And you talked about how for cardiovascular health, there's one set of rules that we believe is true now. But specifically for breast cancer, if we want to stay within the safe range as far as what science is telling us now, what can we drink, let's say, in the course of a week without feeling we're taking too much of a risk?
So in general, we recommend that women don't drink more than, say, 3 to 6 equivalent drinks. So what does that mean? It kind of depends on the weight. 6 ounces of wine or the equivalent in terms of alcohol in beer or in hard alcohol is what's recommended, and no more per day. And of course, the literature and the research is a little bit all over the place with regard to how much is too much. But in general, most experts agree that on average, one drink a day or somewhere between 3 to 6 per week. No more than that is what's recommended for women. For men, they get a little bit more. They're allowed to have a little more. They're bigger than us, and they metabolize alcohol a little easier than we do.
So do we know what it is about alcohol that would stir things up for breast cancer?
So lots of research going into that, too, and it probably also has to do with the hormonal axis and estrogen in particular.
I want to ask about diet because I made a huge change. I'm Japanese American. Soy has been a big part of my diet from growing up all the way. And you know, now, and for a while I gave up cow's milk, had soy milk, and then I was reading more and more literature. And I have completely eliminated soy from my diet, which was a hardship for a while, but not so bad. Does soy really make a difference? Is it really a culprit in terms of increasing your risk?
Well, I would say the jury is out on that, and you probably acted too soon.
Okay.
So we know in populations that eat lots of soy, Asian populations, that those women are actually at lower risk of developing breast cancer. In survivors who have had breast cancer, we worry about the pro-estrogenic effect of soy because soy is what we call a phytoestrogen. It can act like estrogen in some settings. So it's kind of mixed, right? I'm saying in one population, the more soy people eat, but there may also be things different about that population in general, both genetics and their lifestyle. The more this population that eats lots of soy doesn't get much breast cancer. And then on the flip side, I'm saying, but in survivors, we worry that soy is going to cause recurrence of breast cancer or new breast cancer. And when you look closely at the research, it really is pretty mixed. So most experts agree that soy in moderation is okay. It's okay to go out and get your tofu and to have your soy sauce, but not to make it your main food staple, especially if you are at higher risk than the average for breast cancer. But it's, you know, taking it as food that comes in and out of people's diet, and it's hard. It really is hard to avoid soy in the American diet. But that it's probably less about any one element, honestly, in the food, and more about that energy balance that I was talking about earlier, and staying slim and not gaining weight, especially after age 18.
All right, I'll add this. I am an ovarian cancer survivor, so I know that there's that, you know, breast ovarian linkage. So for that reason, I am not technically part of the general population, but I do avoid soy. So maybe I'll stay with that habit because it was a hard one to break. So I want to ask about other things because obviously taking the pill that's reported rumored to have an impact. And then what about things supplements like vitamin D?
So vitamin D, another one that we're kind of not sure yet. There was a lot of buzz about it from some early studies that people who have low vitamin D have higher risk of breast cancer, and that was associated. But whether or not supplementing with D is going to change that is not so clear. And for people who have had breast cancer, it's not so clear that high levels of D will improve how they do in the long run. A lot of people are taking D, and D is certainly good for one's bones, but you can overdo it with D. And so you have to be careful. So that's, I think, an individual thing that women should talk to their doctors about, depending on their own personal risk of bone thinning, as well as their preferences. But for the most part, the D issue is unresolved, and it's okay to take a low level of vitamin D in your multivitamin, you know, 400 to 800 international units, or if someone's really low, you can supplement, but it's not so clear that it's going to help in terms of breast cancer risks for any given individual to take a lot of D. So to address the oral contraception issue, this has been looked at for many, many years, and it does indeed appear that in many studies, the use of oral contraceptives, especially older ones where there were higher level of hormones, slightly increases the risk of breast cancer beyond the general population. That being said, the absolute risk of getting breast cancer in the population of people taking oral contraceptives is actually quite low. And this is coming from a woman who takes care of people who get breast cancer at a young age, but it's still a pretty unusual, rare disease. And you have to weigh the risk of getting breast cancer against the risk of an unwanted pregnancy in a young, healthy woman who's not high risk of developing breast cancer. Incidentally, oral contraceptives actually prevent ovarian cancer. So you have a little conundrum there because there are women who are at high risk of developing breast and ovarian cancer because of their genetic predisposition. And sometimes we give them oral contraceptives to prevent the ovarian cancer and then watch their breasts, even though it might increase their risk slightly of breast cancer during that time. So it can become very nuanced.
Dr. Ann Partridge, medical oncologist, founder and director of the Program for Young Women and Breast Cancer, and director of the Adult Survivorship Program at the Dana-Farber Cancer Institute. Thank you so much for your expertise.
You're very welcome.